Right across the country, it's Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
Now, Todd Sampson is a good friend of mine, a good friend of our show. A lot of people would know him as an ad man, you know, pops up on the project, Gruen transfer, an adventurer who, you know, likes to occasionally try and kill himself.
Really push the envelope.
But his life story is bloody inspiring, and you may have seen it on
Arndo's Brush with Fame.
Transfer. I'm not sure they weren't doing his life story in the ad show. on Arndo's Brush with Fame. It was an incredibly emotional episode last night. He spoke about growing up in a small town in Nova Scotia in Canada. He had working class parents. His mum worked at KFC and his dad poured sugar at the Coke factory.
Yeah.
And he just spoke about how different his childhood was to the world he lived now. And he said that he didn't know growing up that there was a huge family secret in his family, that his mum fell pregnant at 15 and she lived in an area where it wasn't cool to keep that baby, and she was forced to give it up, and she chose to give it up to her sister. And that little girl was raised as his cousin when it was actually his sister, and he never knew that growing up. And he spoke about how he used to record conversations that his mum and dad were having at night. They didn't know he was listening, and then he would play them to his mates the next day, and that's how he discovered this family secret.
I used to record my parents' conversations. I got a recorder for Christmas. Just before I go to bed, I would record under the sofa where my parents were, and then go to sleep. And the next day, I would go with my friend Herbie and listen to the recording.
Wow.
So that day, I'm listening to the recording with Herbie, and I'm like, wait now, did she just say that Wendy's my sister?
Wow.
Imagine that as a kid. That's a lot. And he said he confronted his mum, and it was almost relief, the reaction from his mum, that finally she didn't have to keep that secret any longer. Yeah. And he has a lovely relationship now with his sister. But he also spoke about how his friend died when he was a teenager, and that moment, that tragic incident, changed the course of his life forever.
Gary's brother had gotten into a fight, and the guy he was fighting said, I'm going to come after you and I'm going to kill you. So Gary's brother loaded up shotgun and sat in the doorway and waited for him. Oh. Gary goes home, opens his front door, and his brother shoots him dead. That moment changed my mother from a mom that wanted to hold and keep her son close to a mother who incredibly hesitantly was pushing her son out into the world so this doesn't happen to him.
Well, thank God it didn't happen to him. He joins us now. Todd Sampson, g'day.
Hi there. It's pretty heavy. I haven't seen the show, so that's the most I've heard of the show. It sounds pretty full on.
It sounds pretty full on. That's your life that sounds pretty full on.
Yeah, it's funny with my mom, you know, when she carried that shame with her entire life. And, I mean, Carrie, you know this because, you were kind of supporting me through that time. When mom died almost a year ago, less, she was on her deathbed. And she was not very coherent at all. She was sort of in and out of consciousness, and I just sat with her at night. And the best times I sat with her at night in the dark, just holding her hand. And she didn't speak for 2 days. And then suddenly she just said, in the middle of the night, she just said, I made such a big mistake. Oh. And I didn't know, like, it kind of woke me a bit, and I was like, what, Mom? We all make mistakes. I've made many mistakes. And then she said, Wendy, I shouldn't have done that. I said, oh, Mom, you were 13, you were 15, you know, you didn't. It was a different time, and anyway, that was, and then she died 2 days later. And that was the last coherent conversation I had with my mother about Wendy.
Todd, how hard was it, do you think, for your mum at a young age to, as you said, kind of push your way and tell you to get out of that town?
I was very close to my mother. So I was, you know, if there's a mama's boy, I was one of those. And my mom had always felt that she had been trapped. She was a super smart, sharp woman who struggled with addiction her whole life. And she always felt that she could have done more. So on the one hand, she was projecting onto me, wanting me to do something with my life and not to live that life. And on the other hand, I was her safety line to the ground, which is hard when you're a child and you're living with someone who has addiction. And, you know, when you are the connection to the earth, that's really tough. And so I don't know what was in the edits of his show, but the moment on the deck outside. I had won the scholarship, $30,000. I was on the phone in the kitchen, and I said out loud, "Did I really win?" And Mom just dashed out the door. And everyone was kind of celebrating inside, and Mom was gone. And then I went out, and she was just destroyed on the deck. And, you know, she basically said to me through her tears and her kind of convulsions, you know, she said to me, "That's it. I'm going to lose you forever." And unfortunately, she was correct.
Oh. When you talk about the scholarship there, for people that don't know, you grew up, I don't know whether you were pretending to not be the smart kid or you yourself hadn't recognised just how smart you were, but it was only later in your sort of teenage years that someone sort of, I guess, untapped that for you. Is that right?
Yeah, I was failing at school and I was hanging around with the bad guys and, you know, all the problems that were happening and all the crimes, and I was involved in that world. Luckily, it was a small town, not New York, or I'd probably be dead. But I was involved in that. That was my world. That's what I hung out with. But I ended up doing an aptitude test or some kind of IQ test when I was really young. But a teacher asked me to do it named Mr. Risk, my science teacher. And I don't know the end result of that, but he said to my mom that I had scored one of the highest they'd ever seen. And that's the moment where he said, "This kid cannot be in the lower classes. He needs to be put in the higher classes." And to me, that was a nightmare because they were all like foreign smart kids and I didn't know any of them, and they were rich and they had good houses and they had heating and, you know, they had lots of stuff that I wished, you know, Christmases and big gifts under the tree. I didn't have any of that stuff really, you know. So, but then I joined this class and I fought against it and I came home and I was upset with my mother and everyone had tricked me. And then I just switched my mindset and I applied myself and that changed my life. Then school became my key to the outside world. And at one stage I was the top high school student from the bottom of the bottom.
Wow.
How do you, Todd, obviously, now, the life you're living now and the world you're raising your children in is one where you have money and you have opportunity. Kids have opportunity, very different to the world you grew up in. But the world you grew up in has made you who you are. What part of your past do you bring into your current life when raising your kids to make sure that they have some of that fight and that hunger and all of that you have?
I don't know how to do that. Because on the one hand, I don't, like, so this little small thing happened. Coco, my 13-year-old, ordered Uber Eats at school, a drink, chow time. They're all addicted to this chow time stuff, whatever. You know, so they're like, so she
did they have that in Nova Scotia growing up, a bit of chow time?
No, they didn't. They certainly didn't have Uber Eats, you know what I mean? Like, so she orders it, and it's $20 or something. I don't know what it was. But I got notified, so I didn't tell Naomi, because she would be, my wife would be pissed off. And I said to Coco, I said, "I want that money. I want you to give me that money." She goes, "Really, Dad?" And I said, "Yeah, because she got money for when she gets A's and stuff. We try to recognize her with money sometimes." Anyway, I felt really bad taking the $20 from her. I did, but I felt really, really bad. And I'm just reflect back on my childhood, and I used to steal that money from my mother, you know? So, I never really, now I'm asking my oldest daughter to give it back to me.
But I guess it's the thing when you just said then, you know, about the smart kids and they were the rich kids with a nice house. I guess when you talk about that in a disparaging way is if they were the other people. But for you now, like that is your world, but your family's not like that at all. Is it that you don't think you understood those kids back then and that there were some genuine lovely kids amongst them? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it must be so hard being in the world you are now. Yes.
Yeah, I was judging them. I was judging them because you're rich, you're bad. And I still have a little bit of that in me. You know, I still have that whatever chip or whatever on the shoulder of that a little bit. But it is true. I now have money. I'm very fortunate, and my family's kind of taken care of and all of that. But I still feel most comfortable around the people that are cleaning the floors, not the people who own the building. I still feel there's something deep inside me that just feels more relaxed. Like, Like, because sometimes I feel like the life that I lead outside of television is kind of more of a fake life. But it's not. It's not. It's, again, it's me judging. But I don't, it feels, I don't know. I just relax more with, I hate to say this, but normal people. I don't know. I find it more. I think television also throws you completely for a loop, you know, because you are with really bizarre people. And,
all right, now we're not that weird.
Todd, your story is uncommon because I think most people, regardless of intelligence, who grow up in a rough environment, the result is not that they get better because of it. It's the result is that it ruins their life in some aspect. What do you think made you an exception to that, and what made you go the other way as opposed to get sucked into it?
I think when faced with adversity, most people have two major options. They either run to it and do something about it, or run away from it. And when I was younger, I had so much insecurity about my family and their life and addiction in my home and all the trouble that brought. And I was so insecure. I so did not want that life. So the result of that is, instead of being burned by the fire, I used it to fuel me. Like, I remember I used to hide, because my friends got really bad at one stage, you know, and one of them murdered someone, and it was getting really dicey. And I used to hide in the library.
Yeah, that's
I know
fair.
How geeky of it. I used to hide in the library.
That's fair. When one of your mates is killing people, it's fair to hide in the library,
just
I reckon.
You know, you just can't throw that out in a sentence and then keep talking without pausing for a moment.
Yeah, it's sorry. They edited it. That didn't get into the episode, and I understand why, because it's a little bit much, and I get it, you know. But
I love it. That's a lot.
If that's what you said to your friend as well. Gary, you've killed someone. That's a bit much.
Well, no. Wow. So this is what happened. Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, we do.
Anyway?
I want to know.
Okay, so my friend who lives seven doors down the road, I mean, I just won't say his name. I thought that'll make a difference. We used to pick him as my sister's boyfriend of the future, you know, husband. They're going to get married, and, you know, and he's staying around the house. We were kids all playing on the street together and in the forest together. And one day he went with another friend. He was hitchhiking in Halifax, and he was trying to get to Toronto, the major city in Canada. And he got picked up by an elderly couple in a combi van. And they drove, you know, hitchhiking at the time, it was like a relay race. You get picked up and taken from one location to another, but you never get all the way. So they got picked up, and when it was time for them to leave, they decided they were not going to leave. They decided that they were going to take the van. And they tied the elderly couple on poles opposite to each other, and they stabbed the woman to death with a hunting knife, and they stabbed the husband, but he lived. And then he ended up dragging himself to a phone and then to police. And then, so this guy ended up, obviously, he served a life sentence. And he was released 3 years ago. And I wanted to contact him just because I'd never heard why. Because once you're in the system, that's it. You know, they're gone. Then he got out and killed his drug dealer and the drug dealer's girlfriend. And he's back in jail, so I think I'll leave it as it is.
Todd,
that's what you're leaving.
Todd, I know I said we wouldn't edit it out, but I think we might edit it out.
Yes, exactly.
That's the same as the edited other Anne's show.
Yeah.
You know, good family-friendly feeling.
Yeah, but do you see? That's the world I was in, you know? And it's he's not typical of all my friends, but most of my friends never got to high school, and most of them were in and out of the correctional center at some stage. So that was the world I'd either jump into and fully embrace or jump away from, and I decided to jump away from it.
Well, we're glad in a way you jumped away from it because you landed on our shores. Your life
in a way? We're glad in all the ways.
Yeah, but I mean...
It's not just for our personal benefit.
Okay. Don't hold me up on the language of you. We're glad you're here, is all I'm saying. Yes. So I've seen you post around the place that you don't feel comfortable hanging it anywhere in your home, which, as a fellow Arnbrush with Famer, I understand the predicament you're in.
Carrie's is in her bedroom.
It's not.
It's on the ceiling.
Yeah.
But talk about the moment when you saw it for the first time, because it's so stressful to see how someone has painted you. What did you think when you first saw it?
I was relieved it wasn't bad. Because then I would not know how to hug him or say thank you or, you know, like I was so, Carrie, because you did a lot of crying as well. I was so exhausted by that moment, because what he does, which is so clever, is he gets you there for like 4 hours on a chair and then just for a 22-minute show. So he is fishing in a barrel, really. He is. He's got enough.
I slept there overnight. Were you only there for 4 hours?
Yeah, he painted something different than with you.
No, but it's interesting you say that, because I saw your painting was amazing. But like, I just thought he really, really captured your likeness. But for I didn't want to hang. There was no chance I was hanging mine in my house. Like, how embarrassing. Welcome to my house. Oh, yep, that's me there on there. But my dad really wanted it, and I was mortified. I'm like, Dad, you can't hang that. Like, people already think you have a shrine in your house. You can't hang it there.
No, you can't.
But weirdly, Todd, as I go into his house now, years on, I look at it. And I remember talking to Arne, but also I see more and more of myself in the painting every time I go to his house. It's very weird how I don't know, it's changed over the years. So I'm torn whether you should give it away, because I know you want to.
Well, Naomi's response, right? So my house is littered with drawings, because both my kids love art, and they're all of Naomi. Like, there's literally one of me, a little one that Jet drew. And I think she only drew it because everyone forced her to do it. Because she told me she didn't want to do it, but Mommy said I had to do it. So that's it. And when I told Naomi, because I normally don't tell them about stuff, like, I normally would not tell them about, like, they didn't watch the show. They found out this morning that it went to air because of news.com or whatever they wrote, you know what I mean, about my mother. They didn't even know. So, but when I told Naomi, I said, yeah, I was on Arnold's Brush with Fame. Her response was, no way. And I was thinking, okay, good. What she actually meant was, there is no way that's going up in our house.
I love it.
So Todd, what are you going to do with it?
I don't know, Tommy. I don't know. Like, I want it to go. It's not going in my house. So that's that. And I agree. I don't want a big thing of myself. It's massive. But I would like it to go to a home where it would be, I don't know, appreciated or useful for someone. So I don't really know. I know that I had this fan, she's like 91 or something, and she's been following all my shows, and I can't track her down, so I don't know. But I want it to go somewhere. I mean, I want to qualify by saying, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Carrie, Anna's an amazing artist. It's an amazing piece of art. Like, yeah,
he's amazing.
It's not a slight on him at all. It's just the reality of my life, you know. My family do not want a big thing of me in the house. I get that.
Yeah, so
we've been trying to work out what you could do with it, and where, if it was to go to a cause or somewhere, not a person but a place, can you think of a place where you think it might carry some meaning to be there?
Someone said there was an art gallery, like a community art gallery, and I can't remember where they said, Ipswich or somewhere. Like somewhere, there was an art gallery somewhere that would like, people have responded, because I posted on Instagram and Twitter, and people just kind of sent me a whole bunch of ideas. One was Will Anderson, the other one was Russell Halcroft's house. Yeah. So there have been ideas, but nothing kind of solid with it yet. But I'm sure I'll find a place for it. I need to call Anne, though, to remind him that it's not a slight on him at all. It wouldn't matter what he painted. If it was of me, it doesn't get in the house.
Todd, is Mr. Risk still alive?
I don't know.
We could send it to
your school or to Mr. Risk. I'm sure he'd love it.
I know the school has been torn down, but Mr. Risk, that's a great idea, Tommy.
Idea. He changed the course of your life forever. And for him, I mean, it's a lot in his living room. It's a very big gesture.
It's a big gesture.
But, I mean, what Mr. Risk did for Todd was a big gesture.
Yeah.
Maybe I take a photo of it or something for him. It's big. Like, it's really big. You need a big house.
If we can just take photos of it, we can send them to everyone.
You can make flies.
Someone also said Pearson College, the school I went to. Someone said maybe do it for sell it to raise money for the school, and that's another good idea.
It's a great idea.
All right, we're going to get to work. We'll come up with a plan for you.
If you could, you could tell me that was brilliant already. But if you could figure out something to do with it, I'd be super happy.
Great, I love it.
He's got nothing else to do, so he'll make that his mission.
I got a hobby. Thanks, Todd. Make sure you check out Body Hack as well. New season is currently on, and the first two episodes are available now on TED Play. Todd Sampson, thank you so much, mate.
Thanks for having me.